Brad is on the line. Hi, Brad. How you doing?
I am.
I am glad to hear that you is. I am too. This, I don't know whether to put an email or an article. It's almost like you're trying to communicate to all those people who sent notes by email, one chunk. You're trying to communicate them with them all at once. It's very interesting. I didn't know you got this many responses. How many responses did you get to our anti-aging series?
Oh, wow. Probably 35, 40, something like that.
Oh, my gosh. And most were of the disapproving nature like this?
No. Didn't I say something in the article about this was for all those who didn't say anything but felt like it or something? I think what precipitated that when I prayed about writing this, what precipitated some of my thoughts and some of my questions to Dad was you saying that our traffic had gone down significantly. And we had a little chat about that. I don't know if we did that on the podcast or not, but the chat was that we both were of the opinion that we're doing what we're supposed to do. We prayed about it, and we had direction, and the last thing we wanted to do was to have the audience be our guide or our God, so to speak.
Which brings me to one of my highlighted here. I do not write to please the general audience, and while I respect that, I'd like to be able to say that that reflects liberation and true inspiration, and that you have to come from that kind of a place to be truly inspired, as you claim you are, asking Source for direction. But every editor, publisher, creative writing teacher, spokesperson for how to write books will tell you that you're nuts. You've got to write for your audience.
Well, writing courses that I've taken was know your audience and direct it to them. And what I said was, I don't write for a general audience. I didn't say I don't write for an audience.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that clarification. So for most part, I understand that your writing practice comes from being inspired by receiving emails or comments on the website or questions people ask you. Is that correct?
No.
Okay, where does
it... Not normally, it just was in this case.
Okay. Did it used to be that way?
No, I don't think so. You know, I'm pretty audience-driven in my commercial writing. Commercial being, you know, like training or proposals or contract stuff or whatever somebody, you know, is ostensibly paying me to do, and I write as a accessory to that or whatever. I'm very... audience driven, who's paying me, and it's, but in this case I feel called and both called and chosen. I think you've heard my distinction of what the difference is between those two, haven't you?
Yep.
Okay. And I'm sure I've written about it on this site, so I won't go there. It stands. I don't write for a general audience. I write for people who are seeking the kind of truth that we have, and I'm trusting Dad to bring them along for them as well as for us.
It does make sense, but it seems that or at least half of the audience think that this is not your usual thoughtful spiritual insight. It's a terror.
I don't know that that's true.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you one sort of question here, or bring some attention to one of the statements you've made, where you point out-of-body travel, a seeming occult practice appearing to be far more bizarre. And I think that out-of-body travel is pretty mainstream, at least media-wise. It's been talked about for, 4 or 5 decades as a possibility and experimented with through meditation. And I think the most popular out-of-body travel movie I've ever seen is one with Jodie Foster, where from somewhere afar they receive some alien communication with designs on how to build a spaceship. The spaceship takes off, and she goes through a wormhole to some far distant planet, visits her dead father or something like that. And at the end of the movie, you find out that she never left.
What are you making that?
That the machine really just took her for an out-of-body experience. So what I'm saying is it's that mainstream of a concept, whereas anti-aging, well, what movies are there in that regard?
I don't know. I assume somebody wrote something about Fountain of Youth or something or other. I don't know.
Yeah, but the guy always fails. Ponce de Leon?
Yeah.
And the concept of living forever is typically presented in a negative fashion. And I can give you several examples of movies showing people living forever, and it's presented in a very negative fashion. Or books I've read.
So, all I'm saying is, based on my experiences, most people, when you talk about out-of-body, even when you, let's face it, it was right in the core of Paul's teaching was out-of-body, experience. He talked about it, and Jesus certainly used it, obviously. So,
and John in the book of Revelation.
Well, yeah, but you say he was on LSD or something.
Well, I think that most people that can relate to out-of-body experiences probably did some LSD in the 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, I really think out-of-body experience is pretty blasé and mainstream.
Well, there you have it.
You don't have to work very hard at it. I think I mentioned on this podcast once that my first experience with meditation, the reason why I stopped was because I had one of those experiences. I looked down and I was looking down at myself, laying on the bed meditating. Some might call that a dream. I call it a frightening experience.
Well, in Leapfrog, I quoted a group of people that I happened to have kind of a discussion with, and I still remember this one guy saying that as Christians, we're unbelievers. He was very adamant because he felt that it was the norm for Jesus, and obviously Paul had been experienced it, and as you pointed out, apparently John did also, and he thought that we of all people, we being believers in Christ from where he was coming from, should be at the cutting edge, at the forefront of things like body travel. That was about a conversation about the word transcending. Well, I'm sorry you're not very excited about my article today, Ryan.
Sounds like you're actually talking to a group of our audience. I don't want to discourage that sort of thing, but I don't have a lot to say about it.
Okay.
I'm more than happy to publish this article on the website and the podcast to go with it. So don't get me wrong. I'm not disapproving of what you've written. It's just, it seems to me that I'm being a mediator for the audience that you're speaking to at this moment in time. But I'm not impassioned about this point of view of the person who considers it less than spiritually insightful that we would discuss reversing the aging process. And I certainly don't agree with you that out-of-body travel is far more avant-garde than anti-aging. I think anti-aging is way out there.
Okay.
I just think that, people...
I'm coming from a background of being around conservative, if you would, evangelicals who turn up their nose at anything that smacks of being the, quote, occult.
Yeah.
And they do talk about out-of-body being an occult practice. And so I guess the email I was responding to smacked of that. And so I decided to smack anybody in the face that, my own usual gentle way that held that view. Hey, wake up. My favorite books in the Old Testament is 2 Kings. And just at the bridge between 1 and 2 Kings is where Elijah has his encounter with Elisha, I guess is the proper way to pronounce it. If you remember that story, and that's, of course, where a lot of the people who are proponents of UFO stuff being reality believe that Elijah was taken away by a UFO, the whirlwind, he was caught up in a whirlwind and all that, and why not? I don't have any problem with it one way or the other. doesn't make any difference. But I, you know, I just, I'm always astounded how many Christians just walk away from all kinds of things in the Bible, you know.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. Why are we having this podcast?
Because this article is going to go up on our website. Have you said everything you want to say?
As dull as you find it, huh?
You're never too dull. By the way, Brad, the vote is in, and it's 50-50. It's a tie. It's exactly the same amount of people want you to run as the people who say, nah, don't run. It's not good for you.
Well.
So you're off the hook, buddy.
Yeah, well, I was off the hook anyway. I said I'd take it under consideration if the preponderance was yes. So.
Oh, I didn't notice that weasel clause in your last podcast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I do have to say, I was willing, and I was, if I had in my own mind, if it was just 51%, I was going to do it.
Hmm. Well, and, you're safe, buddy.
I was hoping no.
It's a 50-50, so what are you going to do?
No.
You're not going to run it?
I'm not going to run it. Oh. On the advice of some who, no, it's got nothing to do with anything. It's just that as long as there isn't an overwhelming, boy, I'd like to see him do it. I know I've only had a couple of emails for it myself because we directed it all to you, but I don't feel overwhelmingly passionate about running a marathon.
I don't know if he's that guy that whose picture we put up on the website. I mean, my gosh, he runs faster than 95% of the 20-year-old people, let alone the 75-year-olds.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Oh, wow. So inspiring. That gives me a great deal of hope. You know, because I've never run a sub four-hour marathon.
You haven't?
I haven't. I've always been over 4 hours.
Here you are trying to egg me on into something that you can't even do.
I can do it. And you watch me. I'm going to do it. You just stick around, pal. That fella inspired me.
Good. He didn't inspire me. Nobody ever has, you know.
There's something a little spiritual about running a marathon.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
Give it a try.
Hey, love you.
Love you.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.